The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 281 for Wednesday, July 6th, 2011. My name is Jules Cisek, and with me is Martin Darlington in UK. And it's early morning and you're having your coffee, right?
Yeah, it's early morning, coffee and half asleep. I've got my reading glasses on, which is slightly wonky because I think I sat on them yesterday.
Right.
But thank goodness we're not a visual medium.
Yet.
No.
Right. So we have some stuff to talk about because we had some good racing in Italy. I believe I heard a screaming from across the Atlantic from about your direction at one point.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're going to talk about the test that happened after Mugello and what's coming up in World Superbikes at...
Brno.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Okay, so, first of all, yes, thank you very much to a bunch of folks who wrote in and pointed out quite funnily that the Mona Lisa does not hang in... actually, what did Mark say it was hanging?
Florence, Italy.
Oh, Florence, yeah, okay, or Venice, yeah. It's in the Louvre in Paris, and you know, it's nitpicking, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, the guy's much faster than everybody who's riding in. So you know, like, does he have to know everything? and funny.
And the main lease is not that impressive either. So it's quite easy to forget where it is, I think.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's much smaller than you expect, and it's just a bit sort of like, I don't know what the fuss is.
Yep, yep. I remember, the interesting thing I remember when I saw it years ago was the security around it was cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it was once they realized that, because it didn't used to be, did it? So didn't some kid sort of draw a mustache on her or something ridiculous?
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, so thank you very much for pointing that out, everyone who did point that out. But it's nice to get the kind of feedback because people are really listening, right?
Yes.
So in case you guys didn't notice, this is going to be a patchwork show. All right, so Mugello, we had finally... decent weather, although it wasn't like that the entire weekend. We had the free practice 2 was so crappy that a lot of riders didn't even go out because, especially MotoGP, because we had kind of like those, you know, sputtering rain things where it's too dry to use a wet tire out there, and But too slippery for a slick,
yeah.
And so, you know, some riders went out, like Valentino Rossi went out because they desperately needed bike time, but a lot of them just sat the session out. Maybe did a couple of laps when it was in the very beginning of the session, but nothing at real speed. So we lost yet another session due to weather.
Which means the only weekend so far this season that's been completely dry was Qatar.
Yeah, that's right.
And last year, I think it was Estoril third from last race before we had any wet.
Very different season. It's a very different season.
Yeah, it was incredibly dry last year.
Yeah. Which of course goes back to what we were talking about last week about the tires and the whole, you know, Bridgestone basically producing a tire this year based on the data that they gathered last year, which was, you know, for weather completely different than we've been having this year until this weekend, obviously. And things still got screwed up, as we'll mention later.
But we did get to race day, which thankfully was dry.
Yep.
And we had a 1-2-5 race. Now, this saw the return of Nico Tyrrell after he'd taken a race off to go and get his little finger reattached or the tendons reattached. And he said it was still quite sore. But
And after the qualifying session, they showed him and he couldn't. I think he was like trying to drink. He had to use his left hand.
I mean, he, obviously in some discomfort. Now, he did not qualify on pole. In fact, he didn't even qualify in the front row. We had Johann Zarco was on pole. Luis Salom, Sergio Gadea was the front row. Then Vasquez Tyrrell Cortese, the second. And Maverick Vinales headed up the third row with Hector Fabel and Adrian Martin. And they got themselves away. And we pretty quickly had Tyrrell and Zarco
on their own.
Splitting off, yeah. And
They gapped the field 3 or 4 seconds by, you know, the second or third lap.
Yeah, and yet it only ever went up to a total of about 8 seconds. In fact, at one stage towards the end, the chasing group were in absolutely no danger of catching them. But Vinales, Vasquez and Faubel were starting to close down. We lost Jonas Folger. But basically, we had these two distinctive. We had Tyrrell and Zarco. And, I mean, Zarco following Tyrrell for a long, long time. And then it was Will Tyrrell waving past. Will, I don't know, he ran wide.
He ran wide at turn one, right?
Yeah.
Which is the classic, like, Wojcicki mistake. But then once he was behind Zarco, he was quite happy to be there. Because despite the fact that...
Did he mean to run wide? I don't know.
I doubt it. I think if he wanted him to go past, he could have let him. I mean, is he that sharp that, you know, to take that kind of a risk? He didn't really know Zarco's pace until then. I mean, you got to remember, Zarco had every single stat this weekend. He had the pole position. He had the fastest lap during the race. He had the fastest. He now has the record. So basically, He had a good pace, and so during the race, I don't think that Tyrrell really knew whether he had a better pace than Zarco until he got behind him.
Yeah. No, that I think you're probably right. And he sat for eight laps behind Zarco quite happily.
Well, he basically sat there until the very, very end, right? Until the very last corner.
And then just out-tracked him.
and we knew that was coming because you could tell the entire time. Now, this is something that Zarco did not know because he can't see behind him. But, Tyrrell was sitting up in the draft because he could have easily passed. He could have easily went past Zarco, you know, all those eight laps. But he didn't. He just chose to stay behind. And, tactically brilliant. I'm not sure if I would call it tactically brilliant. Although if you do know that you have the pace to pass the guy on the front and just can stick with him, go for it, you know? Right?
You know exactly what he's doing. You may, if he makes a mistake, he could get past early. And as they came down that long start finish straight, and it's one of those circuits where the start finish line is quite a long way along. You know, quite often, even though you've got a long corner, it's like Catalonia, the start-finish straight is quite early on the straight. Sorry, the start-finish line is quite early on the straight. Well, here it's not.
No.
And Zarco dived to his right to either try and block or move out the slipstream. Then you saw him dive back to the left, by which time he was already behind him. So
yeah, he kind of went... That move he put on, I don't know, that was... You know, we see a lot of... he obviously got penalized two rounds ago, right? For pushing
Tyrrell onto the grass.
Oh, it was Tyrrell. It was Tyrrell, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because remember that was one of the races where Tyrrell waved somebody by, which was in this case Zarco. He'd already done it with Vinales and got beaten.
Yep.
Then he did it with Zarco, and if it wasn't for the stewards, he'd have got beaten.
Right.
Because Zarco pipped him to the line, but he did sort of push him a little bit onto the grass.
Yeah,
so he lost first place.
What's interesting is that this move that he made at Mugello looked really dangerous in my opinion. And like, you know, it's interesting that race direction. At what point does race direction get involved? When somebody tries to do something really dangerous, or when they try to do something dangerous and succeed?
I know, it's like the footballer who tries to break someone's leg and misses by 3 feet, but right. The intent is still there.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, cause if Tyrell had been on his right, that was quite a sharp turn he made.
Yeah. It wasn't like he was trying to... I mean, he may have just been trying to, you know, break Tyrell's draft, but it was a very dangerous move, you know.
And he left it very late. Now, he may, in his defense, he may, by that stage, have been aware that Tyrell was coming to the left, but if he'd already taken a direction, he's already out of the slipstream anyway, so it doesn't serve any purpose to do that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
It kind of reminds me, actually, of the famous Barbara and the Cimicelli race of 2008, I think, when every time they came out of San Donato, Barbera had a better drive out, and Cimicelli was getting really frustrated and kind of closed in on Barbera, and then they, you know, they touched it, and the brake lever got lodged, and Barbera went ballistic, literally.
Trembling. Yeah.
It's obviously it's one of the fastest straights in GPs, and I don't know. You shouldn't mess around.
No, absolutely. No, not at the... I think we had a 209 miles an hour.
That's not the 125s, but yeah.
That's me, GP. Yeah, not the 125s, but it is desperately quick. So Tyrell finished top with Zarco. Vinales won the Battle of Vinales, Vasquez and Faubel, who finished in that order. Demiad Salom, Gadea. Miguel Oliveira, 8th, Moncoya, 9th, Cornfield, 10th, Schrotter, Cortese, Grotzky, Jasper Iwema, and Danny Kent picking up the last point. Quite a lot of DNFs.
Yeah, Danny Webb, he crashed on an FP1.
Warm-up.
Oh, that's right, he crashed in warm-up, yeah. And he was pretty beat up, so he actually pulled, he didn't crash, he just pulled in after 11 laps.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jonas Folger, who was running with that group up front. The second group with Vinales, Vasquez, and Fabel.
Yeah.
And was looking pretty good. As a result, now we have Nicholas Tyrell, you know, gets a couple extra points on Zarco, 5 points. So he's now at 153 over 114 for Zarco, who's now second. He continues to be second. but he pulls away from Vinales a little bit. And Jonas Folger falls to fourth. That's what I was thinking of. Folger was second.
Had been second place,
yeah.
So really at this stage, Tyrell's decision to miss out Silverstone and go and get his finger fixed looks like a, not Silverstone, sorry, Assen, looks like a good one.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
We then went on to Moto2. And again, the championship leader didn't qualify particularly well. On QP, we had Marquez, the front row is Marquez, Alex De Angelis and Bradley Smith, Xavier Simeon, Randy Krumanak and Paul Espargaro, and then Stefan Bradl leading up the third row ahead of Mattia Pessini and Mika Kallio, and Ant West qualifying 10th, which was... quite impressive. Other people of note, Keenan Sofoglu was 13th, and in Andre Ian only 14th, Takahashi 15th. But the gap to the front at one stage, I noticed during QP, until Marquez put in one of his a late lap, there was something like the top 19 were within a second of each other.
Yeah.
You just think, no, it wasn't that wasn't the case by the end, because everyone was pretty spread out because Marquez put in a blasting pole position lap. Then we got to the race and we had a similar sort of situation with little groups breaking off and running. And Marquez led right from the start, but we had with De Angelis, but then we had Bradl came up really fast and joined that group. He had a cracking start. And
Bradley Smith.
Bradley Smith, of course, sticking with them.
Yeah.
Alex De Angelis.
Alex De Angelis looked really good for about half the race. I would say I was thinking, man, you know, he could win this because he's always done well. He's always run well at Mugello.
Yeah.
Even in GP when he was on you know, the satellite bikes, he would run fourth or something like that.
charging from the rear, but it took him a few laps to really get going. Was Andrea Iannone doing the habitual Andrea Iannone, oh, can't be bothered to qualify well, I'll just overtake everyone in the race. Which
we haven't seen for a few rounds, but it's good to see here, obviously.
Absolutely good to see that back. So then we ended up with Marquez, Bradl, Smith, De Angelis beating each other up and taking it in turns to lead and be second and third. Iannone kind of basically came charging up from the rear, went, hello, everybody, and then dropped off because he basically ate his tires.
Yeah, but before he did that, he got into either third or second. He was going past Bradley Smith, and he did this hand gesture, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And there was some discussion about, like, did he just give Bradley Smith the finger? You know, or was he showboating and giving a number one to his fans, because that's the quarter they were all hanging out in?
He got to third. He held third for laps 14, 15, 16, then dropped back fourth. Okay. And then Alex Janzis got past him. And we had him eventually ending up fifth.
And a few seconds back at that point.
Yeah, and between him and the podium trio of Marquez, Bradl and Smith in that order, Alex De Angelis also started to suffer and dropped off a little bit. He finished 2 seconds behind the lead group, and Iannone was 4.5. Behind them, we had another
It should be noted that Stefan and Marquez had a fantastic... Well, the three of them actually just swapped the lead. I mean, this was a really, really good race. You know, those three guys were swapping the lead for pretty much the entire race, you know? And
in fact, the lap chart doesn't really tell the whole story, because there were several laps on which there were... You know, Marquez might finish in the lead. During the next lap, he'd lose it to Bradl, get it back, lose it to Smith, get it back, and finish that one in the lead. So it looks like there's been no leader changes.
Yeah, but it was changing all the time. I mean, I was counting lead changes, and I got to about 20 when I gave up. So
yeah,
it was
and
quite
then
a few.
I mean, from a British point of view, Bradley, the Harry Potter of motorcycle racing, it's really encouraging to see him.
Okay, well, you're going to have to explain that.
Well, he's this, you know, he's not bespectacled Bradley, but he's got this schoolboy face and this chirpy little... I mean, he actually started an interview the other day by saying, crikey. And you think, what? No one actually uses that word anymore.
Okay.
But, you know, but he's this... He looks like, you know, a sort of BBC Two children's drama schoolboy. And yet, there's a bit of a wizard inside, if I forgive the analogy. But, you know, he's got tough bits that you wouldn't think. If you saw Bradley Smith and chatting to him in the street, you'd think, what a nice young chap. He's probably going to be an architect. Or, you know, you wouldn't think he's a top motorcycle racer. And I just like the fact that he is.
Cool.
And he's actually got a bit of steel, and he's got a bit... And I did worry after that 1-2-5 season where he was second to Simon in the way that Simon was second to Tony Elias last year in Moto2. It's like, yeah, you're second, but my God, you never really competed.
Right.
You
maybe
know,
maybe in races, but you still lost those races. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. No, exactly. It was like the straight sets tennis defeat that every set was really tight and ended in a tiebreaker, but you still lost in straight sets. I just wondered how much that would have hurt him. And then, you know, I think the Moto last year wasn't great, and this year he's really coming together with the Moto2. I think it suits his size a lot better.
Definitely.
But he's starting to dust people up a little bit, which is quite encouraging to see. Marquez, obviously, is really coming to the fore. I mean, he's finished 4 races, which isn't a great proportion, but of those he's finished, he's won 3 and come second once.
Right.
That's quite scary.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Now that is championship form if he can just stop the DNFs.
Right. But, you know, Bradl is, what, 60 points ahead still? Oh, no, 52 points.
Yeah. Bradle, yeah. 52 points. I know, it's enormous. And we think Tyrrell's re-established and he's only 39 points.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Bradle's 150.
If Bradle came second to Marquez for the rest of the season, he's still sitting pretty at the in Valencia.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Marquez needs more wet races or something to go wrong with Bradle quite dramatically. And again, Bradle, it's the consistency. It's just, you know, if he doesn't win, he's right up there.
Yeah.
And it must be really frustrating, except for Silverstone. Silverstone.
Essen.
Except for
Essen.
Yeah. Keep getting those two confused. But it really was. It was a fascinating race. It was a really back to, yay, Moto2 doing what we got so used to seeing it do.
Yeah, and a great place to do it. A great atmosphere, obviously, going on over there. Now the championship standings are, well, we kind of touched on that, but Bradle with 147, Marquez with 95. Bradley Smith is now in third place with 79.
Yep.
Simone Corsi, who he finished seventh in the race, is now fourth with 76. Then we got Luthi and De Angelis tied for at 66. Luthi actually had a pretty decent race. He looked like he was going to... his pace was actually quite good, thought he might catch the guys up front, but he ran wide.
That group also were they were slowed a bit by beating each other up because you had Luthi, Corsi, Noy Kirshness, Alethi Spargro, Keenan Safualu, and Dominic Agata, all in this tight bunch, just kicking 10 bells out of each other.
Right, but there was one point where Luthi was pulling away from the rest of them. And then he made a mistake and he was right back with them and they went back to the boxing match. So,
and strange to see Takahashi 14th, Juice Cluzel 15th. You know, terrible weekend for Scott Redding again. Finished 27th.
Right.
Things not going right there. But what is interesting as well, in the top 10 in the championship, we got six different chassis manufacturers. Got Kalex Suta Tech to our FDR, another Suta with Luthi, the Motobi with De Angelis, another Suta with Iannone, then the Moriwaki with Takahashi, then another Suta with Simon.
Right.
So four Sutas in there, but other than that, they're all individuals, which is quite good to see.
It's very cool. It's very cool. You know, I always have mixed feelings about Moto2 because I think it's an artificially close racing class because of the engines and how little control over they have. I mean, they can't even mess with the gearing. So it's kind of a, you know, it's like, hey, we need a class that's really has really close racing. How are we going to do that? Not you know. So it's coming from the direction of the rules that define the racing series rather than you know, the entrance. But I loved the race. So, you know.
I know, there has been this debate. Big John Hart, there you go. He hasn't had a mention for a couple of shows. Big John Hart started on the Facebook page about, come on then, what is there to look forward to in Moto3? And now that will be interesting because they won't have the control engine. They're going to have, you know, manufacturers can put together an entire package. So that we might get slightly looser, you know, we might get different levels of performance and spread the pack out a bit more, but it will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what size grid we get as well.
Yeah. And the most interesting thing will be just how many manufacturers actually end up entering. Right now we have I think five that are saying they're working on the bikes.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good.
I mean, the only one really we've seen that much about is the Honda.
Yeah, of course.
But I love this thing that they're doing 450 bikes. They're going to build.
I love
and they're it. Like, wow. To get, you know, national series saying, right, you can have a Honda NSF 250R Cup. And it's it's not, they haven't taken the engine out of a motocross or anything else. It's a, you know, from the bottom up, purebred racing bike with a racing engine. And, you know, I said to Jim the other day, much as I sometimes abhor their Machiavellian ways and their desperation to win, you know, HRC do kind of then pull a real plum out the pudding. So there you go, boys. And you just think what they do for racing is pretty damn impressive. And I just think it's a gorgeous looking little bike, but how it gets on, you know, I mean, we've spoken about this before, the relative speed thing. It doesn't really matter if they're a bit slower than the 125s were, as long as they're roughly together.
Right.
You know, what we don't want to see is one, like we've seen with the Aprilias, you know, one bike basically completely dominate. And, you know, and if that happens, then if you're on that bike, you'll do well. If you're not, no one will really be able to tell how good a rider you are. And that, at the end of the day, is the idea of the lower classes, to identify the real talents and move them up.
Yes, that's true. It's true, but you also have to remember, most of the GP, the top MotoGP guys say that the Moto2 class is a disaster in terms of preparing people for MotoGP, because they're so, because it is all about the rider, and MotoGP is not all about the rider, and and you kind of have to, as a rider, deal with the fact that there's much more to it than just getting on, swinging your leg over it, and then, you know, having a good day.
Who was it? Someone came out recently, didn't it, in the last week or so, and absolutely laid into Moto2. I'm trying to think, was it Elias?
Well, I don't know.
No, I haven't been there, but whoever it was, you know, basically just, yeah, no, absolutely said that. Said, this is just, Moto2's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good as a standalone series. It's entertaining racing, but it's doing nothing to prepare people for the next step up now. But what effect is that going to have? Does that mean that when we start to, the guys who came through the 250s, you know, I mean, we're looking 10 years down the line before the last of those will be gone out the top series, I suspect.
Right.
Will it mean, and this is, I don't think I phrased it very well when I was speaking to Cal Crutchlow, because I don't think I got my meaning over, but will the gap between World Superbikes and MotoGP, or the perceived gap, shrink? Because we don't have this, you know, the apprenticeship of 125 to 250 to, whereas Cal seemed to think Moto2 reduces the gap because you're inline four to inline four. As opposed to, you know, you're going four stroke to four stroke rather than going from two stroke to four stroke, which is a totally different beast. But then the 800s.
It's just a motor, and the Moto2 bikes still have to do corner speed. They live on corner speed, right? Which is what the 250s are all about. I mean, it's the variety that, you know, from season to season. I don't know. I mean,
but the 800s. I mean, if someone said the other day that, you know, Biaggi must think I should have stuck around for the 800s because that style would have suited his
riding
style.
Oh yeah.
Except for obviously the habitual, oh, it's a corner, I haven't run wide for a while. I'll tell you what, I'll overcook it and run.
I think he would find himself, you know, in the company of lots of other great, you know, corner speed guys like Lorenzo and
I think he'd take the unhappy crown from Casey.
Yep, very much so.
He'd be the king of the whingers.
Yep.
Speaking of MotoGP, we had one of them there races as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't bad for once.
And again, we had the very Assen-like front row: Casey Stoner, Ben Spies, Marco Simoncelli, with Dovi, Jorge Lorenzo, and Colin Edwards on the second row. Then Cal Crutchlow, Danny Pedrosa returning after injury, and Nicky Hayden, Hector Barbera, Carol Abraham, and in 12th place, Valentino Rossi, which was shocking
well.
People. Well, as Twit GP said after the race, somebody in Bologna is opening a folder saying GP 11.2.
Right.
The 11.1 was not a magic bullet. Hiroshi Ayama, Bautista, Randy Depugnier, and bringing up the rear on QP, Tony Elias.
Mm-hmm.
Then yes. We went to the race.
So Pedrosa arrived, and right from the very beginning, it seems like he's been steaming while while he was away about the whole Simoncelli thing, because he arrived with words.
Yes. There's nothing on his head but hair.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what else did you expect to be on his head? That lost something in the translation, didn't it? What else is meant to be on his head? A hat?
I think there was an in instead of an on or something.
And have you seen the clip that a Serbian film crew, who it was the first time they'd ever had press accreditation to MotoGP, they captured the "I'm not shaking your hand"? Have you not seen that?
No, I didn't. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Simoncelli walks up to him, extends his hand, and Danny throws his hands up like he's surrendering. And
like, don't touch me. Don't fucking touch me. Yeah. No, I think he has been... I think he started being pissed on the way down towards the ground in Le Mans.
Yeah.
You know? Because the moment he got up from that crash, he was already like pointing and very agitated. So it started then, and it has not gone away.
And it can't have helped to have been sat at home watching other people racing. In one case, watching someone else on your bike, and watching him continue to crash or do quite well, either of which could annoy him in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at the pre-race conference on Thursday evening, you had the two of them, and Danny basically said, you know, for people who said that the ride-through was too harsh, and he's, you know, and saying no, he shouldn't be banned, this is clearly nonsense because he hasn't learned. He's still doing everything wrong that he was doing that caused that. And then Simoncelli said, yeah, everything him and his manager say is stupid. It's best not to say anything at all. And he thought, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Sat next to each other. I'm sure it won't come to fisticuffs because I think there's only going to be one winner in that instance. But it certainly got verbal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was kind of nice to see that. No, it's not. It's not. I hate to see this bad blood. I mean, I guess rivalry is good, but it's getting a little bit tiresome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like I said, I think Danny didn't get to join into the Simoncelli bashing yet, so I think he arrived with plenty of things to say. Oh yeah,
it's grounds to have a whinge.
What's that?
And probably he's got the strongest ground from which to
absolutely, yeah. Okay, so on to the race.
Well, always obviously been away practicing his starts, because when he arrived in MotoGP, they weren't his strongest point. Casey got the whole shot, and Jorge blasted straight up into second. We had another good strong start from Ben, and we basically had what are becoming this year's, I don't know if you call them aliens, but the usual suspects at the front.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first, after lap one got settled
we're
down.
We're missing Danny, because Danny didn't... I mean, he wasn't going to figure in this one, because I think Danny would have belonged up there if he wasn't riding hurt.
Oh, goodness, yeah. Well, and the obvious one that we're used to seeing up there is number 46.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, him. But we had Casey, followed by Jorge, followed by Dovi, followed by Simoncelli after the end of lap one when he got past Ben Spies. And those five... started to pull away, and then the front three pulled away from the next two.
And Colin, it actually at one point looked like that Casey and Dovi were pulling away from Jorge, because they were gapping him by at least like, you know, two seconds, I think. Yeah, 1.9 seconds into the middle of the race. So it looked like, you know, Stoner and Dovizioso, Jorge on his own in third, and Ben Spies and Simoncelli together.
For the first lap and a bit, we had Nicky Hayden in that at the tail end of that group as well, who got a really good start.
Yes, that's right.
Up from ninth to sixth, and then he ran wide and ended up in the gravel and was plumb last at the end of lap two.
Right.
And Nicky had to fight his way back up to, I think, 10th in the end he finished.
Yes.
Which was a shame. But there was also one spell where it was nice to see the boys at the back had some really good TV time, because they were fighting with Juan Valentino Rossi, and we had a group with Barbera, Bautista, Ayama, Carol Abraham, and Valentino. And he'd get past them. He'd think, "Oh, here he goes." And
well,
then
he had a rotten start. He was dead. He was 14th at the end at turn one.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
because I thought
Tony was going
12
behind him.
You just presume he'll be up to eighth by the end of the, you know, by turn three.
Yeah. Yeah.
But certainly by the end
of the
lap
one. Not the case here at all.
And he'd only just managed to get back to his starting point, which was 12th.
Right.
We also had
him and Barbara had a fantastic battle.
Yeah,
we missed
a
lot of it.
Got past Barbara, and you thought, okay, here he goes. And then the next shot, Hector's got past him again. You think, oh,
and it happened actually a bunch of times because we didn't even see it, but you could see if you were also paying attention to the sidebar, they were moving back and forth. So there was a lot of good stuff going on over there that we unfortunately did not get to see. Actually, the way this round was directed in terms of video time was also just crap all around. During the most interesting parts of the front race, we were like treated with like replays of the start from like 10 different angles, and and some pass that we already saw actually live being replayed. So I don't know what the hell was going on there, but.
Yeah, no, I noticed.
Very frustrating.
And I watched BBC, and then we're able to watch it back later on Eurosport and get proper commentary, so you don't get, "Oh, he's had a nightmare in a bubble car." Shut up. You stupid ex-touring car driver.
You know, I really look forward to you talking about the BBC.
Now, the BBC themselves...
I mean, BBC coverage of MotoGP racing is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, that's what I mean.
It reminds me of Bob and Speed. I mean, yeah. he could go for, you know, 10
yeah, but the
shows
thing is
in a row and just talk about it.
I'm a huge fan of the BBC and the fact that we have several channels where there are no adverts, there's no commercial breaks. They do trail their own programs in between programs, but you don't, halfway through a program, you don't get a commercial break. You know, right. So if you're watching an hour-long drama, you get an hour of it. If you're watching MotoGP, you don't get, you can tell where the breaks are because you get the Dorna music, you get the MotoGP music, but then you go back to the BBC still doing stuff. Matt Roberts is fantastic. Azzy Fan is fantastic. Steve Parrish, I like listening to. My two issues are Charlie Cox and the way they prioritize things, and yet even if they're not going to show it live, if you've got to go to one of the digital services to watch it because it clashes with the badminton horse trials or a Formula One press conference, they still will block Eurosport from showing it live. And I think, hang on, if you're not showing it live on normal TV, it's a bit dog in the manger. They've paid all this money, got the exclusive rights, but then don't actually use them. And I object to that. But I have to accept it's about numbers. And although they're not in the business of making money commercially from their shown programs, they do have to justify fewer numbers than Formula One drags in far more insomniacs.
Right. That's true.
You know, so anyway. But the thing, the person who was having a nightmare in a bubble car was Cal Crutchlow, who pulled in after 5-6 laps, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been struggling a bit. He pulled into the pits, pointed at the front, but there wasn't any obvious fix. And basically, he said after, and he's come in for some criticism, I think, I mean, if anyone doubts his competitiveness, they clearly haven't watched the guy.
Right.
He basically said, "I'm going to crash. If I keep trying to push the way I am, I'm going to crash." Now, I was thinking about this, and I thought, there's such a small grid. He's not to know. As it turns out, this was the only DNF. So he could have come into the pits like he had the week before and said, look, something's not right. Okay, let's have a look. Oh, right. Maybe it could have been a front tire. Whip a new one on. Send him back out. He could have probably still picked up some points, but got some valuable data from a working bike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've not heard yet what was wrong, but basically something just wasn't working. And they both, I mean, Collins' lap progression, he went backwards. They've both said that bike is not working in very hot conditions. It's the opposite problem to the Suzuki. Cold and wet, the Tech Toir, fantastic. Cold and dry, brilliant. Hot and dry, they're struggling to make either of the tyre options work.
Well, now hang on. The Essen wasn't hot.
No,
but that was... And they ate the tyres anyway.
That was a freaky tyre thing.
Yeah. But both of them?
But this wasn't destroyed. I know. That is... I've still not heard any...
There's something going on with the front end of that bike. I mean, it's obviously the same M1 that the factory guys are using. They have a different... I believe they have a different exhaust system, right? But
yeah.
The front end is basically the same. So it's got to be just a setup issue.
I said, yeah, then, like, I know. I don't know. Probably. I feel like saying, like, they're doing the Ben Spees response when we asked him about... The chap asked him about the new forks, and he just looked at him and went, I have no idea.
Yeah, they bounce well.
Yeah. But that was the other thing about the coverage for this race. Ben Spees and Marco Simoncelli basically had a man-o-man for the whole race.
Right.
And Ben was very quick to say afterwards, that was brilliant fun. Well, he would say that. He ended up fourth and Marco fifth after a masterful last lap pass. But they had multiple passes of each other, and we only saw a couple.
Mm.
But they were all clean. The one I particularly enjoyed watching, which I think was one of the first ones we saw, because Marco got past Ben in the early laps. Then when Ben got him back about halfway through the race, drafts him down the long straight, but then pulls out to the left. So he's on the outside for turn one. I'm thinking, well...
I love that. Go ahead.
I'm convinced that was Spees using his brains and knowing exactly. He basically, you know...
He offered him the dummy
and Marco asked for it to be gift wrapped with a little pink bow put on top. Thank you very much. Because I think Ben knew the only way to block someone going around the outside, it's not difficult, but you do have to brake late. So Marco braked very late, by which time Ben had anticipated he'd brake so late he'd overcook it, popped inside him, got the inside line. Thank you very much. Ka-ching.
Right.
But credit to Marco. He didn't see red. He didn't go mad and ram him or anything crazy. He tucked in behind, stayed with him, watched him. He got back past. Ben got back past. Marco got back past. But the reason we didn't get to see this is up front, we actually had...
Something going on.
I do see your point about, wow, have we been so starved for good racing that a one-pass battle has everyone jumping out of their seats. But I mean,
clearly it was the best race of the season. It just, I've heard comments like, that was a effing incredible race, and it wasn't. It wasn't an effing incredible race. But it was fascinating.
It wasn't a Laguna Seca 08, but no. It was fascinating. And
it wasn't Motegi of 2010 either, you know.
No. It wasn't a ding-dong or hammer and tongs. It was a stalking match, yeah. This wasn't the heat of battle. This was snipers.
But yeah, exactly. Lorenzo. And this is what Lorenzo is so good at. And you know, my wife calls him the honey badger. I don't know if you've seen those videos.
No.
It's this. Yeah. Those who know will probably get it. Those who don't know will be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" Yeah, it's just basically this animal that like just doesn't give a shit about anything, and it just
I know about honey badgers. Yes, they can turn themselves inside out or something, and if something's chasing them, they can sort of go from one direction to the other really quick and bite their nuts off.
Right, exactly. The honey badger does not care.
And yes.
So she calls Lorenzo the honey badger because nothing seems to faze him. He just, you know, he's out there and he's doing his thing, and he goes, oh, look at this. I'm catching up with him. Great.
You know? Yeah, and it was really strange because I thought, okay, here we go. Ka-ching. Casey's checked out. He started to put a little bit of a gap in. Dovi got past Jorge for quite a few laps. Jorge got back past. I thought, okay, well, second or third are going to duke it out. And then you quite clearly saw that both of them were hauling Casey back in. Jorge made a very clean pass on that terrifying downhill swooping fast corners. Just, oh my God. How do you do that? How do you take your self-preservation bit of your brain out and put it to sleep?
Right.
He got past. Casey couldn't stay with him and then had a really good battle with Dovi, who, credit again to HRC, no team orders this early in the season. And Dovi got past, pushing Casey down to third, which gave Jorge a 9-point closing of the gap rather than a 5-point, which was, I'm sure he was delighted with. But it was incredible to see. Now, what was interesting is the Yamaha had brought some of last year's bits back in. Now, I can't remember which bits are which. In fact, I'm not sure that anyone knows. And someone did say the precise ingredients of that bike are now as secretly or as closely guarded as Coca-Cola's recipe. But the, you know, which I think sugar and water and brown stuff. But
well, Coke, it was, right?
Yeah.
Cocaine, I believe.
No, Coca-Cola. Oh, yeah, no, it used to be, didn't it? I don't think they're allowed to put that.
Not anymore.
I'm not sure that's legal. Yeah. But that's it. You get a good reputation and then just, you know, take the bit that got your reputation out and who's going to notice? But Lorenzo was absolutely over the moon when he finished. And one thing I have noticed is there seems to be a real coming together of Lorenzo, Dovi, Stoner, Pedrosa, former antagonists who are uniting in the face of the Italians, both the old master and the young apprentice in the persons of Rossi and Simoncelli. But they all seem to be getting on. It's like really weird.
Yeah, but well, you know, they're like the nerds, right? Simoncelli and Rossi are like the
bad kids.
Yeah, the cool exactly. Kids. They're the cool kids, and these guys are the nerds. Yeah. So of course, they're going to hang out together. You know, and pocket protectors,
but they're quite brave nerds because they do. I don't think. I mean, the mind games clearly bounce off Lorenzo. Casey seems to allow himself to get upset, but it doesn't seem to make him any slower.
Right.
It doesn't do him any damage.
No, it's very true. It's very true.
But he doesn't seem to have any kind of Biaggi or Gibbonau-esque effect on him. But Casey was set afterwards and immediately got pelters from certainly a number of people I know for being a whinging Aussie because he said their tyres were too... They overinflated them. They went for a setting from Bridgestone, gave it a go, they overinflated. But both Lorenzo and Dovizioso both said... We couldn't believe how much his rear wheel was spinning up really early in the race. And Jorge said, I can't believe he finished third. So he should have crashed. He shouldn't have been able to finish with the bike doing that. So they were all basically giving each other props. And Casey said, look, I can't take my hat off to them, but I just couldn't stay with them. You know, and he didn't whinge that Dovi went past him or anything like that. So it's really good sportsmanship. Ben came in and was full of praise for the race he'd had with Simoncelli. He said it was great fun. And I thought that's exactly what Marco needed to do.
Yeah.
Have a good bar.
Have a good ding dong, and not actually, and you know, look what he got out of it. He finished the race, and a respected rider was like, hey, this, you know, it was good, clean fun.
Yeah, and the only downside is yet again he's finished below his qualifying position, and I always think that's something they look at and want to, you know, you always want to race better than you qualified.
But you have to look at his lap progressions though during qualifying. It's not that surprising because his race pace is never what his qualifying position is. Whereas some of the other riders like Jorge, Ben Spies, certainly Stoner. Every lap that they do is within a few hundreds of their final qualifying lap. Simoncelli is, you know, the one lap wonder. I don't want to say one lap wonder because he's clearly a fast guy, but his race pace isn't quite where his qualifying makes him look.
No, I mean Wilco Zeelenburg, the Yamaha Jorge's team manager.
Yeah,
they So I spoke to him afterwards and he said, oh, he said, I can't say robot because he hates me saying robot. But yeah, it was like a robot. He said he was just, I can't remember what the laps he was doing, but it was, no, I can't remember what the times were, but it was like he was hitting a, for example, you know,
Oh, the though, you mean, well, he was doing 148.6, 148.6, 148.6, 148.6, 148.6. Yeah, I know.
And it was incredible. Just lap after lap, and he's like, geez. And that's, you know, it, like we said, it's not a edge of seat. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what's going to happen? Oh, whereas if we'd watched Spies and Simoncelli, it probably would have been,
mm-hmm.
If only partly because of half of that. Half of the makeup of that little pair.
Yeah.
But meanwhile,
through fingers,
Valentino Rossi actually did progress away eventually from Barbera, but only by a couple of seconds, but finished sixth. Then we had Barbera, Pedrosa, Edwards, Nicky Hayden in 10th, Hiroshi Ayama 11th, Carol Abraham 12th, Alvaro Bautista, who was running much further up, but had a big
sixth
moment.
At one point.
Yeah. 13th, 14th, Randy Depugno, 15th, Tony Elias, way, way back.
Yeah, and you know, that's the other thing. Tony Elias was, I think, well, he went off track, but he was also up there. I think he was 7th at one point.
Oh, yeah, when he, in fact, wasn't at one stage, he was actually leading that group, but it didn't last.
Right, it didn't
and
last.
And once he went, he never started to close on anybody or anything, so...
I was actually really looking forward to seeing whether the temperature was going to help him, because it's always been, the talk's always been that he can't get the heat into the tires. And I figured that with, you know, temperatures as high as they were this time around, that maybe it wouldn't affect him quite as much. But, you know, he's a mess, and there's rumors floating around that he's already done, that he's going to get replaced by the time that they get to Sachsenring. I find that very hard to believe.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was just saying, I find it extremely hard to believe that they would replace him in a two-week period. If they're going to replace him, it's going to be, you know, during the longest summer break after Brno. I mean, before Brno.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought BSB had cornered the market in doing mid-season rider changes. They're going on all over the place in BSB at the moment. James Ellison coming back in to do World Supersport and BSB to take over from Dan Linfoot, who's been dropped by his team, and we've had Alex Lowe's walk away from his team, and all sorts going on. But the other rumour that I've only heard a sniff of, I think it was Bike Sport News, said because we didn't have Loris Caparossi here this weekend,
he's
recovering. He said the injured and possibly sacked Loris Caparossi, and I thought, well, I hadn't heard that anywhere.
Possibly sacked. Interesting. I heard that in the injured and possibly retired Caparossi.
Yes.
Yeah,
golden handshake.
It's all spin. Exactly.
Well, time will tell. And probably Loris will come back and finish the season with Pramac, and we'll just shut up. But they're already, even 2 weeks away, saying, in fact, 3 weeks away, he's unlikely to do Sachsenring. Is it 3 weeks away? Two weeks away.
And then Laguna.
Yeah. Yeah, that's strange that you have two races a week apart on different continents. They always seem to manage to do that with Laguna.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because they worry if they go to California too early, then they'll just start all chilling out and in the orange groves. And they won't be competitive enough. I don't know.
Or Brooklyn.
But they're already talking that Sylvain Guintoli will come in and substitute for Loris Caparossi at Sachsenring, although apparently that's not completely certain yet. Now, that might partly because Loris will be back. I mean, I know I shouldn't say it's only broken ribs, but it is only broken ribs. Now, I know that's going to hurt, but they ride. I mean, Colin's been riding with damaged ribs. Yes, it's a strange one, but Sylvain Guintoli at the post-race test didn't do very well.
No.
I think it's fair to say.
No, it's fair, to say. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec.
I think we've covered the race, haven't we? Championship standings, Casey on 152, Jorge 19 points behind at 133. Dovi, very much in touch, 14 points behind Jorge on 119. then you drop down to Rossi on 91, Hayden 77, Bensby 74, Pedrosa 69, Ayama 56, Edwards 53, and Marco Simoncelli 50, still in 10th place.
Well, he finally broke into 10th place. I don't think he was 10th.
He was 10th the week before. We did this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Progression, yep. Yeah. He was on 39 points in 10th place after seven races, which is exactly the same place he was last year.
Yeah.
Just got there a very different way.
Yeah.
So then we had this test.
Which was not everybody, because they had, I think 12 riders, and some of the riders were guests,
Factory Ducati didn't, and Yamaha and Tectoire didn't run.
Right.
So you had HRC, Gresini, and the satellite Ducatis.
Yep. But they also brought the Iannone up to check out the MotoGP bike. I don't know what the times are like.
On the Pramac, and we also had Mika Kallio on the Mark VDS Suter, supposedly BMW, that's not been confirmed, the BMW powered Suter CRT bike for next year, which, I don't know, too early to draw conclusions. But it wasn't looking very competitive.
No, it was not.
But,
so it's, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, it's early.
It's the only second time he's ever run it, yep. And it's Mika Kallio. I mean, you can probably say he's going to be 2 to 3 seconds off Casey Stoner anyway, so that's half the deficit made up.
Right.
But Stoner broke the lap record, and had a typical run-in with Carol Abraham, although, interestingly, this was Abraham going to express his displeasure at Stoner rather than Casey whinging, but Casey didn't like the fact that Abraham was waiting for a tow or to follow him round. So he did his usual thing of throwing a bit of a teddy, moved off the racing line, let Abraham pass, and then Carol Abraham's allegation is that Stoner rammed him at the next corner, or they had a coming together.
Right, they got leaned on.
Yeah, Casey says, no, he brake tested me, or he said he didn't do it deliberately. They got back to the pits, and Carol Abraham went and confronted him, very angry, apparently. And
they actually had to, I think, the mechanics had to step in and get him apart.
Separate them, yeah. It was close to fisticuffs. And Carol Abraham comes across as quite a sort of mellow kind of guy, but I thought, good on you. 21 years old,
yeah.
You know, took absolute pelters at the beginning of the season. Oh, he, you know, he's only there because his dad's rich and all that. He's disproved all of that. And I thought, he's finding his feet. He's going to have a go at the championship leader. Good on you.
Now the track.
Not because I like seeing people have a go at Casey, but it just, he's, you know, he's pretty sure of himself.
I actually, you know, I really would like to hear, and if I get a chance to ask him some, you know, like one of these rounds, I would love to ask Casey Stoner, what is the deal with people getting a tow from you? Is it because it's dangerous somehow? Is it because they're slowing you down? Is it, I mean, can't you just ride faster and lose them? I mean, what is the problem with that towing hit? Because I really do not get it. I do not get what the deal is.
Twit GP said, if Casey Stoner was on Twitter and you followed him, he'd hit you. I just thought it was brilliant.
Wow.
Just made me
laugh. Those guys make me laugh.
I don't know what it is. Don't know what it is. But he's got to stop it. But again, it's back to this thing of and I do have this sort of sneaking admiration that he just does his own thing.
Right.
He doesn't care.
He does not care what people think.
Doesn't care a bit. He's just.
But at some point he should, because I think that this attitude of his is not just what we see. It happens probably in the garage with his mechanics, maybe. You know,
in the kitchen with his wife.
Well, I don't know, but you know, he was complaining about how Ducati wasn't listening to him last year. Well, maybe they just got tired of having to listen to him.
Yeah, you know? I mean, the version.
You don't know because of the way he is. You know,
I had a version of that where their answer to everything from the other riders was, "Well, Casey's not got a problem," and when Casey made the complaint, the answer was, well, you're not doing that bad. You just won that race, or you came second or third. That's good enough.
Right.
And it's like, yes, but I'm doing it by risking my life.
Right, right, right.
And this is going to hurt me sooner or later. And it's, you know, I mean, it is so much credit to him that he was able to make that Ducati as competitive. But he's not even Doohan-esque, is he? He's not even... It's not just that.
Yeah,
look, I'm in the right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I mean,
it's hard to compare the two because Doohan was running for Honda and Honda was so desperate to win those championships then that that he was able to blackmail them quite a few times.
Yeah.
Like, I remember there was one year where they brought up a new bike for him to ride. He's like, I want last year's bike, or I'm not going to ride.
Yeah,
you know, and they gave him the previous year's bike, and then he won on it, but. Yeah, I mean, actually, Ducati has been trying that. Ducati has been trying that with Casey, giving him, you know, the forks from 2009, you know, the swing arm from this year. I mean, it's like, yeah. So I think that it's hard to compare those two. Well, no, yeah, whatever.
But what's definitely is happening with Casey is he's very much consolidating the fact that he is going to come out of the 800 era as the very dominant
winning
rider.
Winningest. Yeah.
And he's won 27 to Valentino's 21. And that might have been before Assen. I'm not sure. He might be on 28 now. But
no, it's 27 now, I think.
It's 27 now. The kid's on the roll and looking good. Speaking of Rossi... and you've got some very interesting notes in here.
Yeah, I was thinking about the fact that you know, he keeps finishing decently, you know, and he's fourth in the championship in a season where Honda is clearly dominating, although you know, Jorge's obviously up there too, and and clearly there's something really, really not working between him and the Ducati. He seems to be doing okay, but I just wanted to point out how desperate things are getting, because if you go back to the moment that he entered World Championship GP racing, he has never had a season where he has not won a race. And I can totally see this season him not winning a race, not just because the Ducati is not as competitive, but because there's the amount of people that can win races this season is just staggering, right? We've got Casey Stoner, totally capable, obviously. Jorge, totally capable. We got now Ben Spies. Danny Pedrosa, once he's at full strength.
And
Simoncelli's due.
Simoncelli's got the pace.
You know? And Dovi. I mean, Dovi's not... He's going to be up there. So even to finish on the podium for Rossi this year is tough. Win, it's going to be really, really hard.
I don't think he'll win a race this season unless we have an extraordinary crash fest or something.
Right. Or they do something, or they bring something, you know, the GP 11.3.
But, yeah. Or the nerds all get a chance to go to a science museum and have to miss the race.
I like that. Actually, they were the aliens, now they're the nerds. And then the other thing is about Mugello itself, because Mugello is obviously his home track. He's always done really well. Even when I mean, last year obviously he didn't get to race because he broke his leg, but even when he doesn't win there, he's always been on the podium. The last time he has not been on the podium was in 2001, and that was this crazy race. I don't know if you were watching. That
I'm trying to remember this one.
It was this bizarre, like, beautiful day that turned wet, and they had to, back then it was the red flag.
Oh God, yes.
Right? And then
come back round and restart the race with the grid based on where you finished the lap before it red flagged.
Right, which is what they do in 125s now, right?
Yeah.
And Moto 2. And Rossi crashed on the warm up lap for the wet part of the race, and he didn't finish. And he also, in 2000, had this incredible battle with Biaggi and Caparossi, and he crashed out of the lead, and Biaggi was in the lead, and Biaggi crashed out of the lead, and Caparossi ended up winning the race. Rossi rebounded and finished 12th. But aside from those two races, This was his worst result. This was his worst result since the very beginning of his GP career.
Yes.
Ouch.
It's putting really things painful. In perspective, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, from a marketing point of view, Valentino Rossi may have been exactly what Ducati needed, but the mix isn't working on the racetrack yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. No, there's always next year. I don't think we can say the Rossi year is over yet. Moving on.
Right.
Oh, yeah, no, the other Rossi thing. I don't know if this is libelous or not, but the rumours going around he might be a daddy soon. This apparently started at Silverstone. I never heard it at Silverstone, but obviously in the inner circle. And it seems to be gathering momentum. His long-term but very quiet in the you know, behind-the-scenes girlfriend supposedly is with child.
Hmm.
Or maybe someone's got a photo of her and she's just been to the cream bun shop too many times. Don't know. But, yes, I wonder if that will have the Caparossi effect and add a second to his lap times, or have the Colin Edwards effect and reduce a second off his lap times. Loris's thing being, well, you know, you want to be around for your kids. Colin's thing being, damn, I've got responsibilities now. I better win some prize money. I better go faster. which is the version I prefer, but, you know.
It's a very American kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. But I think that's very much a, it will be, if it's true and he's going to be a dad, it will give another aspect to his life. It'll be interesting to see how that affects him.
Yeah, very, very, very true. Very true.
And he may, check this out for a segue, he may, of course, at that stage think, well, do you know what? I don't, particularly if next year doesn't start very well, I don't really need this hassle with these annoying nerds who keep beating me. I'm going to go to the, you know, the stud farm for ex-MotoGP riders in the form of World Superbikes, which brings us on to...
Well, actually, that or running the team. I mean, he's got Iannone with Uccio running the team now, but maybe, I mean, he could step into a team boss role, too, in the
GPs.
Wouldn't
be bad, would it? You know? Team boss and occasional test rider.
Right.
Is Valentino Rossi.
Right.
Or he may disappear. I don't know. I wonder if he might leave it all behind. Don't want to be, if I can't race, I don't want to be involved. Mm. I don't know.
Mm.
Don't know how much it is in his blood. But we do have superbikes at Brno this weekend. We've got Alex Lowes deputising for Johnny Ray in the Castrol Honda 10 Carter team.
And we're going to see, I'm sure we're going to see a very nice battle between Carlos and Max.
Well, this is Max's track.
This is Max's track. It is definitely Max's track, but it's also a good track for the Ducatis.
Yeah, yeah.
Always
Horsepower Hill.
Yep. So it should be fun. It should be fun. I love Brno. I love Brno World Superbikes.
Oh, it's a fantastic circuit. Of course, you've been there. How many times have you been there now?
Oh, just once. Just once.
Well, it's just right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. It's the way it's sort of... Oh, excuse me, just bang the knuckles on the table. Ouch. it's an amazing track that threads its way through this forest. It's like a proper, it's like Hockenheim.
Mm-hmm,
one of the
exactly.
old
or Spa.
The old circuits, yeah. Yeah. But last weekend, we also had BSB racing and Mark Miller was still competing. Mm-hmm. We're not sure if Mark's going to be at Alton or not. We stood by to hear that news.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a very newly designed Snetterton. They're now calling it the Snetterton 300. I'm not sure what the 300 refers to.
And you know, earlier you were talking about Bradley Smith and Harry Potter. You know, Snetterton just sounds like something out of a Harry Potter movie.
Yeah, but not a good place. Yeah. That would be where the nasty, where the nasty wizards hang out, Snetterton. Yes. So basically we had race one. John, I have not seen race one, but John Hopkins won it from Tommy Hill from Shaky Burn. Mark finished it, finally getting a dry weekend. It was gorgeous conditions in the UK this weekend. It's gone. It's not now. It's raining again, obviously. Mark finished, but unfortunately he was last. But, you know, getting some good timing on the Aprilia. Race two is quite dramatic. Alex Lowes on the MSS Colchester Kawasaki had an engine blow, immediately pulled off the racing line at the end of the back straight, and was praised by everyone. No, he got off as soon as it happened, but he did put some oil down, and we had Steve Brogan and Simon Andrews went down, both of them, and at very high speed. Both of them, well, Steve Brogan thumped into the air fencing. Simon Andrews didn't, although he's actually worse injured. He's got quite a badly broken leg. Steve Brogan's just battered and bruised. But the bikes hit the air fence and catapulted into the air. And the most dramatic shot was from actually watching the leaders go through. And in the background, you just see these two bikes
flying.
But the horror, when I first saw it live, I've got to be honest, I think a wheel comes off one of the bikes.
Right.
A bit of my God, I thought that was a body, and I thought, oh my giddy aunt. And thankfully it wasn't. And the guys are, you know, okay, so I mean, she's got quite a nasty broken leg, but they're alive, you know. And Steve Brogan was quite, I think he was concussed. But they're going to be okay. But wow, it was dramatic. So we had a red flag and a restart, after which we had John Hopkins got out again, looking really strong. Tommy Hill and Shaky Byrne staying with him. Kianari and Josh Brooks very close to them. Tommy ran wide. I think he ended up in the gravel. And in fact, he might have even put the bike down, tried to continue, pulled into the pits, but no, he came back out, did a couple of laps, pulled in again, and his race was over. So we had Hopper from Shaky, from Keo, from Josh Brooks, and Shaky did a gorgeous move on Hopper to start the last lap, and then Hopper did a bit of a lunge, and he's kind of put his hands up and said, yeah, it's a bit, I was just desperate to win, to get a double win. Did a bit of a lunge inside, sat Shaky up, they touched, they went off track. Keo went, yeehaw, thank you very much. Him and Josh Brooks pipped through for first and second. Hopper rejoined the track, came third. Shaky rejoined the track, came fourth. There hasn't been any histrionics. No one's been asking for race direction. Shaky just said, yeah, of course I'm gutted. But, you know, hey. And Mark finished 20th, Mark Miller. Second from last, having pipped, I think it was Dan Kneen. He pipped. So progression being made by Mr. Miller, which is fantastic to see, and I look forward to hearing what his thoughts were on it. Cool. But that was BSB.
Thanks for that. I have a question for you, because I don't understand the classification of the Evo class. Do you understand what the deal is with that?
Yes. The Evo class is like a super stock engine in a superbike chassis. It's a bit like Moto 2.
Okay, so it's technical.
It's not a control engine, but it's a control ECU.
No, I understand, but the thing is, it's not because I've seen riders drift in and out of the Evo class throughout the season,
yeah.
Which is why I've always been confused.
The last year's problem we had with Steve Brogan, who went on to win the Evo class at the beginning of the season, riding the BMW S1000RR, the one thing with the Evo class is you have to use a control ECU with the electronics bit coming from the nominated supplier. But that electronic ECU didn't work with the BMW's engine. They couldn't make them compatible. So the BMW, after the first race, when they were Evo, were then told, no, you've got to use this electronic chip. So they tried it. They said, well, it doesn't work. They said, well, you can't be Evo then. So then they checked the BMW chip and said, okay, it was about three races, he had to compete in full-blown BSB. The confusing thing is the two series run together.
Right, right. Well, I mean, we have that in some AMA classes and certainly in club racing. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
Right? So that's not that strange. I just find what's the purpose of this class?
Reduce costs and keep a full grid.
Got it. Okay.
It's much cheaper. You don't have the electronics package. You're given the electronics package. You're given certain limits. There's only certain things you can do to the engines. I think the engines have to be sealed. And they do a BSB, a rigorous. I think there's engine strips on everybody after every race or something ridiculous.
Really?
It's incredible. Steve Blackburn, who's Cal Crutchlow's in Cal Crutchlow's pit, and he tweets quite a bit, and he was saying they had a bit of a nightmare where they had to strip an engine as a spot check after, I think this was Aston, and he's like, yeah, like we were obviously cheating because we did so well. And he said, yeah, really miss those BSB after race engine strips. Not, you know.
Right.
And I, there is something about it always, if you score points, that's it. Your engine's getting stripped. You know, they really are rigorous with it. But yeah, the Evo class is a, what's strange is you see the race finish, you see Hopper from Hill from Burton, and then you see these three people interviewed, being interviewed and going, yeah, you know, I'm really chuffed. We got the win there. And you're thinking, you came 11th, but it was the first of the Evos, you know. And it's difficult for them. I mean, they want to score proper points as well. They want to actually compete. But if you're leading the Evo class, do you take a risk to beat someone who's not in the Evo class, or do you think, oh, I'll just sit behind him? I don't know. I think you're a racer. If you see a bike in front, you think you can get past, you try and get past.
Right.
Which is what Hopper did, but he's absolutely setting the place alight, doing a fantastic job, and I think he's showing his pace in his class. To come into a series he's never raced before, to go to a bunch of circuits he's never seen before.
And some really crazy circuits. I mean, circuits that don't exist any... There's nothing like that in the AMA. You know?
No, Cadwell Park is the obvious one, I suppose. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's crazy.
Cool.
Love it.
Well, thanks for that explanation. Now I finally get why... Because I just remember that guy coming in and out of the Evo class last year and was just like, what is this class? I do not understand why these things happen. And, you know, I wasn't following it close enough. Cool.
And
all right.
The other unusual thing, of course, is the safety car, which we have in BSB and isn't seen. Cycle racing, but I'm not a huge fan.
No. I mean, we have that at Daytona too.
So, looking forward, World Superbikes Brno. Week later, we got Sachsenring.
Which always has good racing. And for many
it's
years...
It's not a track, but it's really good to watch.
Yeah, exactly. So
Will we get a dry weekend?
They do have a lot of rain there.
They do, but mid-Germany, when it's... From experience of living there for several years, when I was in the forces, when they have a dry... At this time of year, if it's dry, it's very likely to be hot.
Cool.
Mind you, if it's wet, it could still be very hot. But it's likely to be warm.
Good.
Which will help Suzuki and not Tech Toi, apparently.
Right.
So, right. Anyway.
It'll help anybody who's on the Bridgestones.
Yes. Yeah.
Except
those crazy
Toi.
Michelin guys. Just to bring everyone up to speed, Jim has moved.
Right.
Again. And he is without decent internet at the moment, but should be sorted out by next week. And Gonzalo continues to recover from his wounds, his mountain biking wounds, and seems pretty much back to fighting fitness. And his move to Australia is moving on. He's now been given a case officer, which
nice.
I think's progress. Don't know what that means. I thought, why? What's he done? But of course, no, it's true.
Well,
you have to have
a record to go
to
Australia.
Convict,
yeah.
You have to have a probation officer and criminal record. No, you're not coming in here, mate. You're having a nightmare in a bubble car. That shot the fox.
That's a perfect ending, right there, my friend.
Absolutely. Cheers, Jules.
Have a good morning. Enjoy your day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
Ciao.
Ta-da, everyone.